this is one of the of those moments where, yeah, Earth is not this fucked up. This is giant fucking.
If it is, I don't want to know about it. If there's some weird shit in the depths of like the Amazon that also does this, I don't want to know about it. Don't at me in the comments with your weird Amazonian bullshit. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two Asian Blokes Podcast, a podcast where we talk about Asian pop culture, films, TV shows, comic books, anime, music, food, video games, whatever we're feeling at the time, really. My name is Dan with H, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Tavi. Hey, Tavi.
Hey, Dan.
What's up?
We're doing another pivot again.
Oh, yeah, this isn't Asian pop culture, is it?
This is not Asian pop culture.
It's got nothing to do with Asia.
I mean, it was animated by a Korean studio, which is could be. I mean, like, there were Korean animators that worked on it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, there were some Asian names in the crew. But no, we are covering something completely different. Something that I stumbled across just seriously on Facebook, out of all places. You know, that kind of prehistoric social network. Where
that's still a thing, isn't it? Meta now,
it's the company's Meta, but it's still called Facebook.
Oh, okay,
but yeah, I was just perusing through Facebook, and in the A24 group, there's some guy just said there's this really cool animated show called Scavenger's Reign, and it's kind of like a cross between like an animation, and it's similar to like Alex Garland's Annihilation, which I really enjoyed. And I saw the artwork and it's like, oh, it's cool. It kind of looks like Newgrounds artwork, like Newgrounds animation,
when people
were making like really detailed, like Newgrounds, like really cool, not like crude and rude, but more narrative serious animation. I think they call it Mobius style. But yeah, I stumbled across this show, Scavenger's Reign. It was pretty critically acclaimed, but I had not like heard a single drop about this show at all. Did it come out like midway through half year?
Yeah, October 2023.
October, yeah. So it was like near Halloween time. So it's been out for a good like 4 or 5 months, but yeah, I had not heard anything about it.
Well, it got released on Max, and
yeah,
Australia especially doesn't really hear much about HBO Max.
It's on Binge in Australia
because we go through, because of fucking Rupert Murdoch, we got to go through fucking third-party streaming services that nobody wants. Yeah. But it's the only way we can access HBO stuff.
Like, yeah, if you're one of those lucky few who have Binge in Australia, do like watch this show, because I watched it and I was just fucking blown away by this show. We were talking about in our Best and Worst Of, which should be out by now, by this recording. I said the first Slam Dunk was my favorite animated thing of last year. I think this has superseded it, because I was watching this show and I'm like, damn, I just was just in love with the animation. Like, I hadn't seen a show that is both like quite tense and brutal, but also very relaxing at the same time. I would say it's a cross between Alex Garland's Annihilation if Studio Ghibli made that. Because it really felt like I was watching a world. Like, you know how you watch a Studio Ghibli film and you see like all this weird stuff happening, but it's like everyone is just fine. This is like the movie where it's like you see the results of what happens if you get consumed by these creatures.
Well, before we get into it, because I'm sure a lot of people listening to this episode probably have not watched this series yet. So if you want to go into it totally blind, maybe get a Binge subscription and go watch it before coming back to us. But we'll probably talk non-spoilers first and give you a fair spoiler warning before we drop major spoilers. And I'll put in time codes as always if you want to jump around. But yeah, do you want to give like a brief outline as to what this show is about, Tavi?
Yeah, sure. So it's about it's set in like the future, kind of like Aliens style, and a ship has crash landed onto this planet, I think it's called like Vector 9. I might have said that wrong. And it kind of tells the story of these different survivors, and they've all kind of been separated, and they're trying to get back to the ship to release all like the passengers from cryo sleep and to get off the planet, essentially. So the plot is very simple, but much of the beauty in this show, it is the planet.
Yeah,
like you are watching David Attenborough. Like it's very much a David Attenborough, animated David Attenborough in space with all these weird creatures and weird things.
Yeah.
And like the fucking, one of the things that really stands out for me in this show, aside from like the calming nature of it, is the fucking, the body horror in this show.
I feel like those like, two ideas are pretty at odds with each other, with the calming nature of this horrific situation.
You'd be so surprised because like, it's such, like I don't like binging shows, and I watched this, I didn't binge it, I watched an episode a day. Like I would hunker up at night after I'd done a bunch of work, and then I'll just sit down and just in the dark, like on my like my big TV downstairs, and I'll just watch one episode and kind of just like absorb each episode because it is just it's very relaxing. I find watching this show very relaxing.
Yeah, I see what you mean. It's like it's kind of in the same vein as like Mushishi.
Yeah, I was going to make that comparison, which I haven't seen. Yeah.
Yeah, the stuff that he's encountering, it is quite beautiful and in its natural beauty. But it can also be really dangerous as well. And you, more than Mushishi, I would say, you get a real sense of that danger in this show. I mean, this is an American animated series created by Joseph Bennett and Charles Whitner. I've definitely said that name right. And it is based on their 2016 short film, Scavenger. So I haven't watched Scavenger, but from my understanding, it is just an 8-minute short film. Basically centered around two crash survivors just doing stuff on the planet, you know, interacting with the natural flora and fauna of the planet in order to accomplish tasks, which you get to see a lot of that in this show.
There's a lot of kind of meandering, I guess, but it kind of adds to the show, I would say.
I think it starts off very strong, like it basically centered around, I want to say, five main characters, which are a group of survivors that have kind of crash landed on this planet Vesta and are trying to survive, but also trying to find a way off. So they've ended up in different parts of the planet. So one of the groups contains a character named Ursula, played by Sunita Mani, and a character named Sam, played by Bob Stephenson. So I think this pairing from the first episode, you get to see a lot of the interactions between them and their environment. Like they seem to have a good understanding of how the planet works because they're kind of using the natural flora and fauna to activate the beacon, the calling beacon for the ship, the Demeter.
They use it a lot to like traverse like the environment. Like you see like them use like these fish looking things to as gas masks, and like for me I'd be like, I'm not fucking shoving a creature in my fucking nose.
It's interesting like, because at first I thought, oh, they've been on this planet for ages, so they've had time to kind of like learn all of this stuff. But then you learn like they haven't actually been there for that long.
Like a few days,
But I guess it kind of makes sense because Ursula, I think, is the Demeter's botanist, maybe. Like you get vague backstories for all of the characters through flashbacks. So I think Ursula is the botanist while Sam is like the chief engineer or something. So they're a pretty unlikely pairing. It's basically like, I think their relationship before crashing onto the planet were just co-workers, right? Like they weren't really close.
They weren't friends.
But through like having to survive on this planet, just the two of them, they've kind of gotten closer and learned to work as a team. But at the start, they're kind of using this like bioorganics of the planet to kind of power their machines, which is really interesting. Yeah, they use the fish gas masks at one point.
The balloon.
Yeah, the balloon things, which is very like Legend of Zelda.
There's, I mean, you mentioned Legend of Zelda. Like there is there's a lot of hidden references, I think, in this show, like to go on to another one of the lead characters. There's Cayman, who you kind of see the most backstory out of, and he's kind of like he's an engineer of sorts, and you kind of see he's like degrading relationship with Fiona, who's like a scientist who works on the ship, and he kind of has some guilt with her, but he interacts with this baby-faced monster.
Well, it's not a monster at the start, though. It's just a creature.
It's just a creature, but it's very much like no face from Spirited Away.
Yeah, very expressionless. I watched this with my partner, and we were just, every time this creature appeared on screen, we're like, man, he looks so disappointed in Cayman. He's got this look of disapproval at all times. Yeah, it's really fun to watch. He starts off really little.
It is fun to watch, yeah, yeah.
So this creature, I think it's credited as Hollow.
Okay, yeah.
It is telepathic and telekinetic. So it kind of stumbles across Cayman, who is kind of trapped in his escape pod and going mad. But the little creature manages to rescue him using his telekinesis. But then...
They kind of have like a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah,
together.
So he projects images into Cayman's mind and controls Cayman in that way, so that Cayman can kind of gather food for him. So it's kind of established that this is how this particular animal feeds. It uses other creatures to gather food for its survival. Yeah,
like there's a montage of Cayman just killing all these like creatures on the planet to feed it to the Hollow, and he ends up like killing another Hollow, and it's quite like a serious beat in the show.
It's very dark.
And it's just that's dark.
Kind of a turning point. So, like the creatures themselves, I don't think are malevolent because this is just how they survive. Yeah, they just use their telepathic abilities to control lesser beings that gather food. And usually, at the start, the food that is gathered for them is things like fruits and vegetables and things like that. But then Cayman, after failing to gather food that way, decides to go on a killing spree and kind of introduces this new methodology of food gathering, which is just killing animals and giving it to... So it's not even clear that... This is this animal's natural diet. I think this is kind of
Do you think that like it is kind of just the corruption of Cayman? We can probably talk about this a bit more in the spoilers section. But there's definitely like a commentary on just the... Because he's got like... He's kind of the antagonist of the crew.
He's the rat bag.
He's a rat bag. So it's kind of like his... rat bagness kind of corrupts like the nature and the nature of this thing. But he's actually still very like empathetic, I would say.
Yeah.
Like I think he's just like he's just a normal
regular, everyday rat bag.
So everyday like white rat bag guy who like has issues with his wife.
Failing marriage and all, yeah.
Yeah, failing marriage and he just wants to be noticed.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, I quite liked Cayman's storyline, yeah. Then we got we have Ozzy and what's that robot's
Levi?
Name again? Levi. Yeah, we have Ozzy and Levi.
So Ozzy played by Wunmi Mosaku, and Levi played by Alia Shawkat.
Yeah. So Ozzy is kind of that like more like survivor, like that strong-willed survivor, the more athletic of the crew, I guess.
And while Ursula and Sam are trying to like activate their homing beacon, Ozzy is kind of just hunkering down and creating like a sustainable environment for herself to just kind of like survive in. So like farming crops and creating a defensive perimeter with the help of her robot sidekick, Levi.
Yeah, who is kind of, I guess... quote unquote infected by some kind of goo parasite thing.
There's a lot of goo in this show, actually.
Yeah, there's a lot of
come to think of
it. It's Levi's arc is Levi, I'm going to call it she because it does have a female voice. Mm-hmm. So just for convenience sake. So she kind of starts to get a conscience because she speaks. They gave a pretty interesting design because she has a normal like human voice when she speaks. Mm. But the way Ozzy treats her is like trash.
Basically. Yeah, it's basically like you're talking to Alexa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like
you're talking to Siri or Alexa. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I really liked Levi's arc. Like, I'm a big sucker for this kind of burgeoning new, like, human AI that kind of have a soul. Mm. Like, I like this kind of story, kind of like, you know, the Joaquin Phoenix and her, or like, I mean, Scarlett Johansson and her, this kind of burgeoning.
Okay, the Michael Fassbender human. From Alien Covenant. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. That wasn't really a focus, but when it's been like the sensual theme, I quite like this story, like this kind of element.
Yeah, who didn't cry when Ana de Armas cool. got killed in Blade Runner?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, Ana de Armas. Yeah. I guess that's a spoiler, but that's an old movie anyway. Yeah. Fantastic film. Get!
Yeah.
Get!
Get!
Get! The very memeable Rankos of that movie, which you've probably seen in multiple internet videos. But yeah, Ozzy doesn't have too much of an arc, but her arc is like discovering... She softens up to Levi at some point, but she's definitely like a cool character.
Mm. Yeah, so those are the three main groups, right? Yeah. There's Ursula and Sam, Ozzy and Levi, and Cayman and his alien buddy. And so the
hollow, yeah.
Yeah, the first episode kind of ends with Ursula and Sam activating the homing beacon for the Demeter, which is their main ship.
Yeah.
So then the Demeter crashes down to the planet, and all of the survivors, including Cayman, see it crash. So kind of head towards the Demeter in the hopes of rescue, of getting off this planet, I should say. Cayman doesn't initially because he's kind of like doing his own thing with his new alien buddy.
Yeah.
But you did just mention like out. The, I guess a lot of this show is about the planet itself, right?
It's a planet. I think the planet... It's interesting because the planet is like the main character in the show.
Mm, it's like how New York is the main character of Sex and the City.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. But yeah, the planet is, it is both the protagonist and the antagonist of the show. So the way the planet interacts with all the survivors, it is both like, yeah, friend and adversary. You know, there's all these things that kind of want to kill them. But as you said, none of it is... like malicious in a sense that it's just survival. That's how they survive, you know? But then there's a lot of like really like beautiful moments that if you took out would probably not have too much sway on the story. Like there's a really like one of the marquee moments is Sam and Ursa running through this like thorny forest thing that's closing in on them. And then she comes across this like flower bud amoeba, what's that, sea anemone thing with the like a little tiny frog man inside. Yep. They kind of have like a little moment.
Yeah, and he does a bunch of stuff and like, then it's kind of like,
and then
yeah, it's peculiar, all right.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, but then she's like, I just had like a moment, and then the Sam like kind of berates her for like wasting time. And you see that with a few other characters in the show as well, where there's a clear sense or theme of like people who like take the time to appreciate the nature that they're in, and people who are kind of a bit more self-centered and just like just push forward. This is probably more like the second half of the series.
I guess the beauty of this show is you can kind of see it from both sides. Like I guess all of us have that kind of duality in our personalities where it is nice to kind of stop and smell the roses, but also, this is a pretty desperate survival situation, Ursula. So maybe,
but I think it's like maybe you know, let's hustle. It's sometimes, like it's because if you watch any documentary, nature documentary, or if you watch any compilation of 10 most dangerous creatures, like I was really into animals when I was a kid, so I was always into all that weird stuff. You can really like see how this world itself is not that much different from Earth. There's really? A lot of fucking weird shit on Earth. There's so much stuff that crawls under your skin and fucks you up.
Stuff though, Tommy. Like, the thing that struck me about this show is that everything is a thing. Like, nothing is just a rock. You know what I mean? Like, they'll sit down on a rock and it turns out to be a fucking turtle thing with like four massive legs or whatever. Like,
yeah, but like,
nothing can just be an inanimate object in this planet. This is
kind of like it's kind of like the planet's prehistoric stage.
Okay.
Like, if we were alive like billions of years ago, something would just kill us. And like,
That's true.
I really want to talk about the body horror in this show, because I remember when I was watching it and I would be talking to you, like, when it comes to watching animation, I don't often get grossed out or feel unsettled. But like, when I was watching, even though like I find the show quite relaxing, some of the stuff that happens in this show, a lot of it like is literally getting under your skin. Like getting a prick from something and then that prick, it evolves into an infection and it turns into this fucking weird ass shit. And it's just like, oh man, it's like quite grotesque, but in a really like cool and fun way.
There's a lot of times in this show where like the characters will just squat down and start touching a flower. And I'm like, oh, don't do that. Don't do that.
Don't do that.
You don't know what that is.
Like, like the first time you see it is in the first episode with Ursula and Sam, and then they kind of like they come across some crew or another ship and they're all dead, and they've got like that kind of I guess this is Last of Us inspired, the cordyceps thing. They're all like overgrown and stuff,
mushrooms growing out of their eye sockets kind of shit.
And then there's like this spore thing that releases, and then like that's when like Ursula starts having like a panic attack, and then she starts hallucinating. And then she has, I think, this is most definitely a nod to Akira, is when, like, her guts, like, spoil out onto the floor. It doesn't actually happen in the show, but she, like, falls and it's just like, it's like that Tetsuo style.
I thought Ursula was done at that point. Because, like, thing, like, going into this show, you don't really know what kind of show it's going to be. Like, whether it's going to be that kind of show where they're just killing off characters willy-nilly, or whether it's the kind of show where, like, you know, most of the main characters are kind of safe. So like in this kind of environment where the characters don't really know what anything is, and anything on this planet could kill. So you do get a sense of, there's like a real tension, even in the calm moments, like you don't really know what's going to happen to these people. So I found that really, really engaging aspect of this show.
Yeah, it's just the animation itself, as I was saying, it's got like kind of that Newgrounds style where it is quite a timeless look. Sometimes some shows where they kind of try to be realistic, but then as the years go on, you can kind of see the age of it. For example, a movie that you and I probably both really liked at the time and maybe think it's okay now, Final Fantasy Advent Children.
Oh yeah,
like
I love that.
When I saw that movie as a young teenager, I was like, "This is the best movie ever made."
Yeah.
Now, like, graphics have evolved to the point where, like, the graphics in that movie are just in games now.
It's not about the graphics, Darby. It's about the characters.
It has really cool fight scenes. So that's like, I really like the fight scenes in that movie. Maybe we should talk about it in another episode. Maybe when the new Final Fantasy VII comes out. But yeah, just I think they call it like the Mobius style animation, where it's just a lot of really broad strokes and a lot of like clean colors, like kind of solid, not too much like shading and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it almost feels like an indie game, you know? Like sometimes, as the characters are traversing through this environment, it feels like you're playing like an indie game where anything can kill you. It's got that vibe.
Did you ever watch, there was like this series of cartoons on Newgrounds called Bitey of Brackenwood. Did you ever heard of that?
No.
Yeah. It was just like, it was done by like this Aussie guy, and it was just about like this kind of fur ball with arms and legs, and it would just like be a creature in this like kind of fantasy forest thing, and it would just like interact with the world and try to look for food. And they were always really short. They were like 5 minutes each. And they were really good at the time. And this is on Flash before, I guess Flash is now defunct for a number of years now. But just watching that show, I'm not sure any of our listeners are familiar with Bidey of Brackenwood. I think the animator's name is Adam Phillips or something. Yeah, it was just like, it was really cool to watch back then. So when I was watching this show, it felt quite like nostalgic in a sense of that style of animation. Because this is well and truly an adult animation, but it's not graphic in a sense. It's intense and it's pretty violent, but I don't think this is an inaccessible show. I think it's quite easy to watch.
Yeah.
Because usually, like when it comes to adult animation coming from the West, it's usually like a comedy or something that's very like raunchy, and it kind of has that that cheap look, or it would be that kind of superhero style animation.
Okay, so you're talking about things like Invincible or...
Yeah.
What's it called? F is for Family.
Yeah, Invincible. Yeah, Invincible is a superhero animation. But then you got stuff like Family Guy, and there's a number of all those Family Guy ripoff shows. Like, I think one's called like Big Mouth or something on Netflix.
Yeah.
So a lot of that is like American style animation, adult animation, Rick and Morty included.
Yeah.
You're kind of sick of it, yeah.
Yeah, you don't see this kind of like meandering kind of show that often in American.
It almost
animation.
Feels like Japanese in a sense. Because as I said, like I feel like this is something that Studio Ghibli would make if fucking Alex Garland was like working for them for a day, and then they just make this kind of fucked up shit. Because it really does feel like I'm watching that. Like you know how. Like the masses of creatures clumping together and this just environment.
Yeah.
And it's really like great to watch.
Yeah. And it does have that this, kind of vibe of like weird shit happens, but then you kind of just have to roll with it. Like they don't explain anything really. They don't really explain.
Soft world building is what it's called. It's not like, there's no backstory. There's no like the history. There's no appendices. It's all just like, it's there and you just got to take it for what it is, like a creature as part of this environment.
And it kind of makes sense. Like a lot of the creatures, even though I did make fun of this show for everything being something, like it does kind of make sense. Like all of the creatures that they do introduce, they make sense in the scheme of the world, I guess.
Yeah. What was the your most memorable creature? And this could be a spoiler if it is one that because there's a lot in this show.
Most memorable creature. Come back to me. What's your most memorable creature?
Oh, it's a little bit of a spoiler. I'll preface it with the just letting you know now. It would be the tree blob things that clone stuff.
Oh yeah, okay.
Like
yeah.
That's that shit is fucked. Like the way that thing.
I assume that was the body horror that you were talking about. It's just And then it's like, and then you're done.
Looking at the wound.
I think that's a bit of tryptophobia coming through there, Tom.
Yeah, it's just like, ooh, just watching it. It's fine.
Yeah. Does that classic mistake of hiding the wound.
Yeah. It's like, I just think that other creature as well, like the parasite thing, like that's also fucked and it turns into the giant octopus looking thing that you have to feed. It's fucked. I loved it. Just like the horror elements are actually really strong in this show.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily scary, but it is very unsettling. Just like peeking through what is behind the oh my fucking god, and the and I think it the madness that being on a planet like this and having these relationships, like these kind of symbiotic parasitic relationships, can like drive you to it really has to be like a spoiler to go more into that, but I was just in awe of just this, the weirdness of it. And I just loved how everything's like, it'd literally just be like a stick, but then it's like this fucking worm thing.
Everything is a thing. I mean, I guess we haven't really talked about the characters yet in the show. I think, like you mentioned, the insanity of having to survive in this kind of environment.
Yeah,
I think
it's
displayed in these characters pretty well. Like, I like how all of the survivors kind of have their own approach towards survival. Like, I think Ozzy is very much like, all right, let's just get to the next thing. Let's just do the next task. Yeah. Sam is kind of the guy with a plan, I guess. He wants to kind of like be ahead of the situation and be really prepared for it.
They use a lot of the technology, and they use a lot of the planet more so than the others to get through.
Yeah, he's definitely the main driving force towards like their salvation, right? He's the one that uses the beacon to call the Demeter down. Ursula is there as well. I think Ursula is more of a supportive role for Sam at first, but she also is really vibing with the planet, I think, more so than any of the other characters, maybe with the exception of Levi and maybe Kamen as well, kind of like against his will.
It's interesting because, like, usually, like, if you're kind of like that activist tree hugger, like, the planet is like, you gotta, you know, embrace the planet,
respect the nature. Until, like, she sees something horrific and then she's, like, all stabbing and fire.
The fucking, like, the way that the Hollow, like, feeds Kamen at first, it's like, what the fuck? It, like, shoots out, like, this umbilical cord thing out of its mouth, and then it goes into Kamen and it's just, like, feeding glop, whatever it is. And then it's just like,
but
oh,
I think that
gross.
Might be, to answer your previous question, I think that might be my favorite creature design overall is like
the Hollow.
I think that's just a really interesting idea of this creature that's able to use telepathy to kind of like get its meals, you know, like and I guess like in the case of Kamen, it's projecting memories in order to get him to do its bidding. But like, I guess the question is like, what is it doing to the other animals? Like I guess you don't really get a sense of like how cognitive the other animals are. Like maybe the little weird creature with three legs has like a wife as well, like an ex-wife that is being controlled by like, but you just don't know. But I think that's a really interesting idea because it's weird because the Hollow has these awesome telekinetic abilities as well. So it could theoretically just kill for its food itself.
Yeah. I think that is probably my minor criticism or nitpick is the telekinetic powers, because you don't know the limits of the powers, and there's a number of points where like it kills things very easily, but then near the end it doesn't when it could, you know. This is a bit of a spoiler.
Maybe we can get into spoilers at this point.
I think we're struggling to.
Yeah, I think like really good show. I think like you said, the artwork is really cool, and the vibe of the show. I think it's not a mean watch. I would say
it's not a mean watch. Yeah,
I would say it's even less mean than Annihilation.
Annihilation is like not, it's mean for lack of a better word.
This is more like you can kind of vibe out with the planet, but there are moments of tension because of the environment that these survivors are in as well. And the narrative is quite strong. We haven't really talked about the story for fear of spoilers, but it is a compelling story and it goes at a clip. So
I definitely like 100%. Recommend it. It's one of the best science fiction tales I've seen in like years. Like it's really just a strong, different. It's a really different show. Like I haven't really seen or felt anything like this when I was watching it. Like that combination of calm and brutality. It is just quite interesting to watch, and it's like a pretty violent show, but it's also, I think, very accessible because it's not mean-spirited. And I think that because it's an animation, if you are squeamish, it is probably easier to digest, I think. Even though there's, like, if you are, like, tryptophobic, like you might have a bit of a hard time. I'm a little bit tryptophobic, but I kind of liked watching it. It just felt like weird to see. It's great. Like, this is one of the best animations that I've seen. And I want to buy like the physical version of this if it's ever released. Because I know physical media is dying and stuff, but yeah, I wanna like keep this. Like, I think this is like worthy of like a collection.
I'd love them to make a video game set in this world.
That would be really cool. So fun. Don't get stung by the tendril things. Ah! Oh, you play like a multiplayer. Yeah, it could be one of those like asymmetrical games where you like control the planet. And then there's these survivors. You have to control the monsters to like fuck it up.
Yeah,
fuck up the yeah. Nah, it's great. Yeah, I think it's a very underrated. One of the most underrated shows of last year. Like the most critically acclaimed show that nobody watched last year.
Yeah, if you're one of the 30 people that is eventually going to listen to this episode, maybe go check out this show because it is very good. But shall it's we talk so spoilers, Tavi?
Yeah, let's do it. So I want to talk more about the creature with the tendrils because it happens to Sam at first, and this is kind of the turning point to his, I guess, downfall.
Yeah,
they're just walking through this field of like these kind of bright light things, and he's just walking along, and then you see like this like tentacle vine thing just sneak up on Sam. And he goes, ah. It's just like, yeah, a little thing, like, ah. And then he looks at his arm, he looks at the wound, and it's like these three puncture things. And it's like, oh, man. It's just like, ooh. And then you see, like, this little bit of pus, like, leak out.
Yeah. It's the fact that it's three holes as opposed to two, and the holes are just big enough to make it really uncomfortable to look at.
Yeah. And then, yeah, you find out that this creature, what it does, it infects people with its tendrils. And then eventually the creature that it infects will travel with its herd. Because you see it happen to like this pig thing. It travels with its herd and then it passes out and dies. And then the infection, whatever's happening inside it, it will explode and shooting these like moss, like dandelion floating things, but whatever it touches, it like disables, and then it melts, right? Oh, no, it's like an acid thing, yeah, and it'll just melt, and then whatever's left of that field, it will just grow like a new field of these glowing tendril things, and it's just like, oh, that's so fucking like, you know, fucking Lovecrafty.
I mean, it's pretty cool in a way. It is similar to like how flowers.
Yeah, it is basically a flower. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like getting, you know, another organism to transfer its pollen to another area so that it can propagate that area. It is pretty similar to that. Yeah. But yeah, a lot more grotesque because when it pricks the creature, when it pricks Sam, it I guess it steals its DNA. Because it creates version of Sam in a womb like bug, and plops out like a proto Sam, and then that proto Sam is driven.
Oh, what it does it buries like its original host. It seeks out its host.
Yeah,
because that's what like the clone pig does. It seeks out and it buries him.
Yeah.
And Sam's like injured, and it's like, what the fuck is going? It's like, oh, this is a helmet, and then. Yeah, it was quite. This is kind of like the campus story slasher segment where there's like this thing in the woods and it's stalking them. It's great.
Weird because the clone of Sam is like, it's not really cognitive, right?
It just roars.
I guess it's programmed to do this thing, and Ursula is kind of getting in its way, so it kind of goes after her. It is pretty horrific, but at the same time, it's kind of like, yeah, this is what this animal does. This is how this flower works, I guess.
Yeah.
So, like, she kind of runs around, and, like, at a point, she is at one side of the camp, and the fire is between her and the Sam doppelganger, and it just walks through the fire because, it doesn't know any better, I guess.
And that's how it dies.
Yeah.
I mean, poor Sam. Sam gets, like, prodded and stabbed, and his blood sucked. It first happens in the when Ursula and Sam are in the in like this pod, this whale pod thing, and then there's like the bugs that like try that slink down the tube.
Yeah.
Then they have a fight with this giant beetle thing, and then Sam gets knocked out, and Ursula's like slightly incapacitated, and gets like this little tendril thing, and it just sticks it into Sam, and it starts drinking his blood, yeah. And his eyes are like, and he's like doe eyed, and he's just like. It's just like, yeah, like, oh man, yeah. This guy is just fucking just.
It's cool because when you're watching this show, you don't know like what's fatal and what isn't. So you're like, oh, maybe Sam's done at this point. Like, is he?
Yeah.
You know, this could be like a paralytic. Maybe he's getting his insides drank. But yeah. I mean, he doesn't die from that. He lives on to like get captured by like some kind of weird bird with like ribs on its back.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
He just like shoots him away.
He steps on like his egg. He's like, he's like, yeah, picked up by this rib cage bird thing. And that's the I forgot about that. Yeah, Sam goes through a lot, but he does eventually like his ultimate thing is like they come across this old. Survivor, this old lady survivor who doesn't speak very much, but she like seemingly wants to help them. So she like helps Sam. She uses like the earth to like heal his arm, and then that like tentacle thing, like the barnacle shit on his, it's gone. So that's good. Ah, relief. But then like you see the old lady, she coughs up blood, but in the middle of this blood on her hand, there's like this little seed thing.
Mm.
And what she does, she goes over Sam and she like makes a hole in his heart area and then drops it in. But you don't see her do that. You see Sam's expression just like when he's like kind of unconscious.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the fuck has she done? Like,
well, when I saw that, guy. I thought that was just part of the treatment. You know, like
I thought so. I thought there's something sinister going on because there's like some music happening, and it's just like I kind of thought it was part of the treatment, but I was suspicious. I'm like, this is, yeah,
because she's doing a and bunch then, of weird stuff to him, you know, like you don't really know what's medicine and what isn't. So when she did that, I was this is some kind of like shamanic ritual, this is part of it, right?
She's coughing out blood. She's like,
yeah, I mean, like sometimes shamans do that. Sometimes like they'll cough up some shit and put it in your mouth. I don't know. I don't question their ways, Darby. Yeah. But no, like you soon find out that, yeah, it's bad news for Sam. Because like Ursula kind of has a moment with this lady. Like she kind of finds out a little bit about her backstory. But then like Sam wakes up and discovers that this lady is attached to like this, like this it's like she's attached giant through umbilical cord to like a weird monster.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved it. I also really liked that creature design. I just thought it was so fucking cool, but it's also just fucked. Like, what is this fucking, like you were talking about how like I was saying, yeah, how Earth is pretty much like that, is like this planet, but then like to bring your point that Earth is not this fucked up, this is one of those moments where, yeah, Earth is not this fucked up. This is giant fucking,
if it is, I don't want to know about it. If there's some weird shit in the depths of like the Amazon that also does this, I don't want to know about it. Don't at me in the comments with your weird Amazonian bullshit.
It is fucked. And then like, because Sam discovers, it's like, Ursula, we have to go. And then Ursula goes and she peers through this, because you don't really see what Sam has seen. You know, he's just freaked out. And then, like, she like, peers through the door. And it's like, what the fuck? And she's like, this, like, old woman is, like, floating in the air with these fucking tentacles. And it's just, like, it's almost like the thing, I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
And they just run away from her, yeah. And you kind of find out that, like, that old woman was, like, another survivor. She knew a lot about the planet beforehand, but like I think they were just like crash landed on there. But the it's kind of a precursor to what happens to Sam, is that he kind of goes a bit mad after having this seed implanted in him.
Yeah.
And then he starts, he's like, I feel great, and he's just like has all this energy, and you see him like scratching his chest a lot. And it's just like, oh. And
then, like, it's very much like the guy that's been bitten by a zombie but is hiding the bite.
And then they look at the wound and it's like this like cut open, like, heart, and all this pus is coming. And he's like, what the fuck is this, Sam? Like, I feel fine. I feel great. And then he's like, you find that he has, like, a lot of energy. And there's a really funny, playful montage of him just, like, being super restless. And it's quite, like, playful and like, childish.
Yeah.
And then it gets more sinister when he starts, like, going into this cave and chucking all this mud clay shit all over the walls and, like, it's showing that he's, like, building a new den for whatever this new thing.
He's, like, compelled to. He doesn't really understand why he's doing it. He's not even really conscious of him doing it, but at the same time, he does have all these functions. He's able to talk to Ursula and respond to Ursula. But then when Ursula calls him out and he's like, what the hell are you doing? He's like, I don't know. I'm building a womb. What are you doing?
So he's obviously, like, being slowly, like, morphed by this parasite that is on his heart, but the parasite is also the thing that's keeping him alive. It's giving him the strength to do.
Yeah. And they just, like, open up his chest and they're able to see this parasite. They just pull his chest open. It's like, oh, yuck.
It's like, you see this thing, like, it's like, I feel like this is what Ridley Scott wanted to do with Prometheus, I think.
Yeah.
This kind of, like, world where it's a bit fucked. And, like, yeah, they do it better than what Ridley Scott did.
Yeah, it's got shades of Prometheus and shades of Alien Covenant as well.
Shades of Strange World, if you watched that shitty Disney movie.
I did not, but I'll take your word for
basically
it.
It's basically the kid version of this movie.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like, it's bad.
Yeah.
It's just, it's not great. But I don't want to talk about that movie.
But, like, Sam is definitely being controlled by this parasite, but he also kind of has his wits about it. He's got a certain level of control. You kind of see it at one point where Ursula is incapacitated and Sam is kind of looking after her, but then he ends up coughing up a seed. And then he gets the irresistible urge to plant the seed in Ursula. But she manages to wake up before he gets the chance to do so. So he's still there, but the parasite is also compelling him to do stuff that he knows is wrong.
So he eventually, like, sacrifices himself. He lets Ursula go. Because they do eventually reach the location of the ship. And Ursula, like begs him to come and not give up his life, but he's like, no, like, this is not something that, like, the medical facilities on the ship can cure. It is, like, he's basically become part of the world now, which is both, like, sad and natural at the same time. It's kind of, he kind of, like, has a, he, like, he rips out the parasite and he like shortly dies after. Like, poor guy, he's been through a lot.
Yeah.
And,
he was almost there. He could see the ship.
He was almost there. He could see the ship. But, it's a pretty sad moment. There were a number of, like, sad moments. I mean, to pivot to probably, like,
Ozzy
and Levi's story. Ozzy does cop a bit of the earth, like, fucking her up a little bit. Like, she has the cotton candy dandelion things that, like, paralyze her.
Yeah, she'd be dead if not for Levi.
So Levi is, like, super tank as well. He, like, fights some of the monsters, like multiple sizes bigger than
Levi is a robot, but, like you said earlier in the episode, that she has been infected by this goo that is kind of making her sentient as well. So she starts doing things that a Levi normally wouldn't do, like singing music, for example, and feeling the sensation of touch. And making decisions for itself as well. So
And just, like, interacting with the planet,
Ozzy kind of discounts this as, like, a malfunction at first, but then she slowly starts to realize, oh, this is, like, she kind of respects Levi's decision to become more human, I guess.
She accepts it. She realizes, like, Ozzy has feelings now, you know. So if you're, like, Alexa ever starts, like, questioning and, like, doing stuff, you know, you get to
the shut it down. Send it back to the factory because it's going to take over the world if you're not careful.
But, I do want to talk a little bit about that. The shit that happens to Ozzy, her, like, wounds as well, when she doesn't get, like, pricked by anything, but, it's that, like, fluffy shit, And then, like, it leaves, like, these infections on her. And then it's like, Levi, can you have a look at my... And she, like, lifts up the back. And it's just this fucking eczema-ridden fucking gushing goo. It's like, ooh, it's infected. I was like,
it looks like shingles. It's shingles.
Yeah, shingles. But then they go in... She goes into the, like, this giant pod water where it's, like... the fish things in Japan, like Dr. Fish. It's like a big version of that, and it eats all the like the wounds away from her. And I think this is like the transition to when she starts to realize that Levi is becoming human, you know. And I get really attached to Levi, so there's a bit where it's kind of like Ozzy shuts off Levi just to see, like, oh, I want to see what's wrong with you. And then the bit where it's kind of like Levi says to like Ozzy, like, I'd appreciate it if you don't do that again without like my permission. And she's like, oh, sorry, Levi. So it's kind of like that turning point. And it's just like, yeah, you kind of realize that Levi, I mean, for us as viewers, we know what is happening. We always knew that Levi was turning human. But then this is like the point there.
Yeah, that Ozzy realizes that. Yeah.
Levi's just really likable, though. Just like, it's kind of like just a kid just discovering things. Like, you don't really understand why you are acting the way you are, but you're just attuned with nature, you know? And I think that's how a lot of like animals and even like humans are born. Like, there must be something in our DNA that carries through, like, to react and act the way to the way things are, like, in the world. You kind of just accept it. Like, you don't really know why you would start singing or why you'd start feeling this and that. It's just how it is. I thought I liked the character. Not as much happens in this like arc plot wise.
It is an intentional decision to make Levi very likable because she gets killed off quite soon after that.
Yeah. That was really sad. I was like, oh damn. Yeah, they come across Hollow.
Hollow, who has absorbed Kamen at this point.
Kamen, yeah, which we'll probably talk about. And then it's like, oh, help me. And then it just rips Levi apart.
Yep.
Which is like, yeah, I was going to say, that's the part where it's like, I don't really know what the Hollow's like power limit is. Because there's a bit where like there's another survivor that wakes up.
Yeah, that guy.
This was really funny. And he's like, oh, it's like probably the most, because a lot of the characters are quite introspective, but this guy is like, this plot is fucking crazy. He's like trying to drink water and just getting attacked by it. It's kind of like how we would react. Like,
it's definitely a red coat. This guy.
It's really funny because he's just freaking out and everything. And it's just like, everything wants to kill me. Get me out of here. That's probably like, and then he comes across Kamen, and then Kamen has already kind of accepted this Hollow relationship, I guess. And the Hollow comes and just like snaps the guy's neck with his telekinesis.
Sees the guy as kind of like a threat to his and Kamen's relationship, so it just snaps the guy's neck.
I guess it's like the criticism of that is like there's a number of times where Hollow fights Ozzy, and it just doesn't do that. It just throws Ozzy around. And I think this is like, why wouldn't it just like freeze her and snap her neck? Like if you wanted to kill her, because it's obviously a threat to you. Like, wouldn't you do the easy way? Wouldn't you just snap everything's necks? Yeah. But I think that's my only point of criticism for the show.
There is a bit of plot armor, I guess, with the main characters.
Except for Sam.
Except for Sam, yeah. Sam doesn't get
Sam's plot armor was pierced. Yeah. I mean, there's a bit of plot armor for Ursula in the first episode, if you think about it as well, she inhales. But I think the show is still like 10 out of 10, even with all that. Because that's just quite minor to me.
Yeah.
I think.
And I think when I was watching it, I didn't really question it. Why wouldn't it? Because I think when it snaps that guy's neck, it kind of has a clear purpose. It's like, oh yeah, this is like, if I don't do this, then I'm going to lose my meal ticket, really. But then when he's fighting Ozzy, I think it's more like, this is a bit of a nuisance, so I'm just going to kind of like batter you around and hope you give up.
Yeah, there's probably like an energy level or something that we don't know.
Yeah, it had to replenish its mana.
Yeah. it's got its mana. Yeah.
But I think, I guess Ozzy's arc also, she encounters a bunch of other survivors.
Yeah.
So there's a group of people from a different colony that are doing a bit of mining on I guess, this planet's moon, and they receive Ozzy's distress call. And they go to the planet in the hopes of finding Ozzy and then getting the resources from Ozzy's ship and taking them back to their colony. So not a great group of people, but like...
they're all right. There's,
yeah, I mean, they're Chris, there to kind of help, but also to benefit from the situation at the end of the day.
So they're there to only like look after themselves, basically.
So these three characters, there's Chris, who is the strong leader type. I think his name is Terrence, is that right?
Yeah, Terrence. Yeah.
So Terrence is like the second in command, the second experienced officer in the ship. And there's Charlie, who is the kid.
Barry.
Barry, who is the rookie of the ship.
The questionably Asian kid, I think.
Ambiguous ethnicity.
Ambiguous ethnicity, yeah. Because after Levi dies, like, you know, Ozzy has... pulls out a distress call and they come along. And I think like what Chris is basically the old Ozzy, just kind of maybe a little less selfish, but because Chris is very much like, I'm only doing this to get what you need and like you should face reality kind of thing. Because like she just keeps telling Ozzy, because Ozzy, what they want is for like Ozzy for them to take them to the ship so they can like take all the engines and stuff and take it back to whatever planet.
Yeah, you know. She's got no interest in saving the other survivors on the Demeter.
Yeah. She kind of, it's funny because she's so like one mind forward, but when they do actually get to the ship, like the people are literally like right there. Nah. It's just like,
because they're going to hold her back, Tavi. She's not there for them.
Like, nah.
Like, just like, fuck this him. It's an interesting character. It's like, because she is very much like, yeah, we can do this through teamwork, but teamwork means only following my orders and doing exactly what I say.
Yeah, she's an interesting character. I like the character. Like she's an asshole, but it's kind of it's relatable as well.
Yeah, she's kind of every hard ass manager that you've had is
she's like every female lead rom com, but never went through the transition of meeting the hunk that changed her. In like the girl boss in the girl boss in the I think my mum was watching The Proposal the other night with Ryan Reynolds and Sandra Bullock.
Okay.
And Sandra Bullock is like the hard, tough as nails, like I guess book editor. But then she through rom com antics she ends up softening up. So Chris is that character but never softened up and just kept going with more ambitious and leaving I guess bodies behind.
She is pretty hard to like, and like
because
she's kind of like got this kind of cultish vibe to her as well,
which kind of makes sense because she's like revealed to be part of a cult at the end, right?
Oh, is that what happened? Yeah, I guess
so. Did she just drift down to,
Yeah, it's a bit ambiguous. Yeah. I thought she maybe lost control of her ship because of the shit that was on there, and then she kind of drifted into this cult ship. Yeah, I don't know. Because she wasn't dressed like that, like a weird cultist.
I thought, that was funny because, like, jumping ahead, she does... because there's Barry there, and he's like the kid, and she... They kind of have a scuffle, like Chris and Ozzy, and they kind of knock out Ozzy because Barry's like, I'm mates with Chris, but like I feel bad, but Barry doesn't want to let the people go, so Chris is kind of like, all right, you do what you got to do, I'll wait for you, and then she just leaves.
Yeah, with the ship. Of course she would. I was really surprised when Barry was surprised that happened.
Yeah, I was really surprised as well. Yeah, I guess Barry's a kid, so Barry's probably thinking like she wouldn't do that. Yeah. She's not that heartless when she is.
Bye.
Yeah. But you see, like this little like speck of a thing just float onto the ship as the doors are closing or the ramp is coming up. you just know, like, the way that the show tells its story with something like that, it's just this little visual cue, and she's like, oh, she's fucked.
Yeah, no, it's a flower, like, I think. I think it's a flower. It's a flower that Barry finds earlier, and Chris is like, just take it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, just take it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We do have to talk about, like, Terrence a little bit. His demise is both sad but kind of funny at the same time.
It's really funny.
Because, like, yeah, because Barry has this toy that Terrence gave him, and he kept playing. It's kind of like the Home Alone voice recorder thing. And he keeps playing with it, and Chris gets pissed off, and she throws it away. And then, like, Terrence is like, I'll go get it for you. It's on this really ominous looking green patch of a thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, and he's just slowly reaching out to get it. And then his fingers just, like, rub on, like, the minutest part of this thing. And then he just gets entangled in these vines. And he's not coming out of it. He just snapped. And it's, it looks so painful.
And it's really funny because that could have happened to any one of the survivors at any point in this show.
Yeah,
but it just doesn't. It just happens to Terrence.
A lot of it is luck, yeah. Well, at least Terrence went out, like, quickly. Like, it didn't happen to Sam. Sam has been fucking stabbed and prodded by every fucking thing.
But that's, like, the vibe you get from the planet. Like, watching this planet, everything is a thing, and, like, anything seems like it could kill you. And in Terrence's case, yeah, the first thing that he comes across pretty much kills him. So I feel like that's what would happen to us if we landed on there. It's just like, ooh.
Yeah. I mean, it nearly happens to, I guess the precursor to that is because, like, Barry is, like, recording all these, like, really beautiful sounds that the planet is making, and it comes across this weird giant butterfly looking thing, and then it opens up its wings and it's like decomposing, like, this dog creature thing, and it's like, holy shit.
It's hard to get behind all of their whimsy when, like, pretty much everything is able to kill them.
It's true. It's very balanced, though. It's just, I find this joke quite relaxing because I watched it again, actually, and when I watched it the second time, I kind of binged it a bit more, but I was kind of, like, doing stuff at the same time. Like, I was like, just cooking or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's quite, like, I don't usually like watching shows that are like that way, but I think it's just the vibe of the show. You can kind of just have it on and you can kind of feel its presence.
Yeah. You wanted to talk about Cayman a bit.
Yeah. I was going to talk about Cayman. His arc is, it's different. Like, I am not really sure entirely, like, what his backstory is. He's kind of like a failed engineer, and he kind of wants to prove himself, but he's having, like you kind of keep seeing these flashbacks of his wife at the time, Fiona.
Yeah.
And there's a very clear sense that he feels guilt over something. And I think it all culminates into the ship is crashed because he wanted to prove himself somehow or defy Sam's order and go a different route.
It's because
like there was like a leak in one of the ship or something. And then
something went wrong Cayman had to take a more direct route. Otherwise they would lose tons of resources and it would be his fault.
But the route they had to take
was super dangerous according to Sam. So Sam vetoes it. So, Cayman has to go behind his back to kind of reroute their course to take the dangerous route, which fucks them over.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. So it all happens because of Cayman. And I think it's just a typical, like, middle-aged white man America trouble where he's kind of being sick and tired of being downtrodden by things.
Cayman from the get-go is portrayed as a very flawed character. Like, through his flashbacks that are projected into his mind because of the hollow. Like you kind of see that he has like an inferiority complex. Like,
I think one of the very
first flashbacks is him trying to light a fire and failing and then getting upset with his wife, like for no reason really, just because he couldn't start a fire.
Even from that
small like flashback, you get to see exactly what this kind of bloke is about. And then, like you said, it culminates in him making a big mistake, basically because of his ego and trying to save his own job. He also takes one of the last spots on the escape pods, and
yeah, that's it.
Inadvertently causes his wife to get stranded
on the ship. So that's what he like feels the guilt for, is like that's what's weighing him down. Because you do find out that she is dead. Like you find, I think they find her body in the ship.
Mushrooms growing out of eye sockets. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. With like you were saying before about how the Hollow is not necessarily a malevolent creature. It is kind of seen as almost like an outsider at the start. It's kind of like implied that it's being bullied a little bit by its contemporaries.
Yep.
But then once it starts connecting with Cayman, that's kind of the human, I guess, human corruption. I'm assuming that's what the show is trying to get at, where it starts to infect nature. And I think that is just, you know, how humans like to crossbreed things and make, it's like weird. I mean, the example I can think of is like, you know, crossbreeding with dogs and stuff and like making wolves into like chihuahuas eventually. That animal creatures that can't fend for themselves, or these super freak creatures that will just fucking, I mean, it's Jurassic Park almost.
Sure.
And then like, yeah. You know, people making fucking ungodly chili peppers that millions and trillions of Scoville units above the... Yeah, so it's kind of the corruption of nature.
Yeah, there's a bit of an environmental mess. Like, Cayman is essentially an introduced species, right? So, before the Hollow comes across Cayman, like, this species of animal are seen to use their telepathy to get creatures under their control, and these creatures go and gather food like fruits and nuts for the Hollows. But once this Hollow in particular connects with Cayman, and Cayman introduces the concept of murder and gluttony, I guess, because he overfeeds the Hollow as well.
Beats it.
So and that's when the creature becomes a bit more aggressive and a bit more malevolent.
I think Cayman and the Hollow's arc is probably the most interesting one, because it says a lot. It's not the most pleasant one. I mean, well, Sam's one is probably not the most pleasant one. But like, I really liked watching Cayman and the Hollow, and Cayman's like freakouts, just like with each time the Hollow is punishing Cayman with the telepathic. Because like, I think Cayman kind of knows that he's being manipulated, but he's like, he kind of keeps falling for it.
Yeah. Well, he tries to escape at one point, and then the Hollow manages to catch up to him. And then I think Cayman kind of just accepts his fate.
Yeah. And then he said, it eventually just consumes Cayman completely.
Which is like,
becomes one. Yeah.
I was a bit confused by this, because I wasn't sure, like, what is their relationship at that point? Because this is, you don't really see any of the other Hollows doing the same thing to their meal tickets, right? So this is maybe the first time a Hollow has done this, but like, you don't really know why it's done this, and you don't really know, like, is this creature now Cayman, or is it still the Hollow, or like, what is the percentage of it? You know?
I think that's the point, whether it's just like, I mean, we don't know the anatomy or the history of these creatures.
Because it attaches an umbilical cord to Cayman.
Yeah.
So I guess it's feeding Cayman, but Cayman is no longer feeding it. It has to get its own food from this point on, right?
I think it is literally just the symbiotic relationship. I think it is literally just they've become one. So the Hollow has just become like a manifestation of all of Cayman's and humankind's like insecurities and violence, and it's just this it literally becomes just this force of
destruction,
a force of destruction. It blows up the ship from the scavengers, it kills Levi, and it's just at any point it can see to like kill something, especially a human. And I think this must be like Cayman's influence, because as soon as it sees Arzi, and as soon as it sees any of the other man-made things, its first desire is to destroy it, as if it's trying to kind of bury its own guilt, like Cayman's guilt.
It's interesting, I guess, because it does come across like Fiona's, Cayman's wife's corpse, and it kind of curls up next to her. So yeah, it definitely has Cayman in it still. A big part of this creature, this entity, is Cayman. And then when that sleep is interrupted, that's when it goes on its destructive warpath, which culminates in it almost killing Ozzy, but then Levi comes in to save the day.
Yeah, that's right. Levi comes back. Levi, we haven't talked about that. Levi's not actually dead.
Yeah, Levi is Jesus.
Levi's Jesus, yeah. Turns into, like, bio-organic Levi. It's kind of cool. And then, like, Levi kind of... Because Ursula comes across Levi and say, like, are you a Levi? Like, what are you doing? I think I used to be. And it's like, what are you doing? Like, I was born here. And she's like, not wrong, because she's now completely a bioorganic part of the life. And she creates these other little
Levi's.
She creates these little Levi's. They're very cute. Yes, they come across the little Levi at the end in the cult, in the post credits.
And again, you don't really know what the little Levi's do, so you don't know if it's about to kill all of the cultists or what. So
yeah, it's true. It doesn't seem like it, but like, I don't know,
they're pretty cute, but you know, a lot of the cute stuff on that planet are also murderous, so.
But so eventually all the characters converge except for Sam, because he's dead after all the shit that's happened to him. So they all converge, Sam and Terrence, actually. It's a pretty violent show, but the body count isn't that high, come to think of it. It's just the random dude gets his neck snapped. Levi doesn't actually die. It's just, Sam and Terrence.
And other, but anyway, you know, other survivors, like the people in the cryopods, half of them get killed.
They come up, like, you see, like, their corpse. That's the horror aspect. Like, they've been eaten by, like, these fucking raptor things that are clawing at the... Man, there's so many fucking creatures. Like, designing the ecosystem for the show would have been fun, but very hard work. Like, there's so... It's an ecosystem. It feels alive. Everything kind of serves a purpose. It's kind of like what Frank Herbert did with Dune. They probably spent years trying to make this planet. And then, they put it out on HBO Max, which nobody watched. or Binge, which nobody watched, unfortunately. We did, so that's good. But, they all converge into the ship. And then Chris escapes. So they don't actually get off the planet at this point.
Yeah.
But what happens is they have a fight with the Hollow. They kill the Hollow, and then they don't kill the Hollow. The Hollow like turns back into its baby form.
Yeah, they get separated. Then, so I think is it Levi that blasts them apart? Or?
Yeah, Levi. No, it's because like the Hollow tries to do its suction to Levi through its like hole, but then Levi.
There's a big Kamehameha against it and then blast them apart.
Cayman gets released, So it doesn't actually die, just scurries away. And then Cayman
gives one last disapproving look as it scurries away.
I like that design a lot. It looks funny.
It looks very like, judgmental. Yeah. It's a very judgmental monster baby.
But like they do rescue the crew, and there's kind of like a romance plot point between Ozzy and this other girl, Mia, which is kind of like, it's not a big thing, but it kind of gives Ozzy a bit more urgency as well, a bit more of a purpose to, and it kind of, there's a flashback between them that gives more backstory to Ozzy's character. But they eventually, they just stay on the planet and they live there. Where I'm going with this is, when I saw this show, it was billed as a limited series, but do you think there would be a season two for this?
I guess
probably not, because no one watched
it. Depends on numbers, I would say. Why not really?
I hope this becomes I hope this becomes like a cult hit, because it's great. Look, if there was not a season two, I would not be upset, because I think all the stories that have been told in season one with all these characters have concluded.
Yeah.
The only other story would be for them getting off the planet, but I feel like their arcs are satisfying. But I'd love to watch a season two if they made one.
Mm. There's definitely room for a season two.
There's a whole world.
Yeah, I would have liked a bit more exploration into Ursula's connection with the planet. I think like when she's in that thorny brush and she has that moment,
the frog thing.
It ends up being quite random. I thought they were going to circle back to that, but they didn't. So yeah, I think there is definitely room for a season two, but like you said, I don't think there absolutely needs to be one. Maybe a video game.
Yeah, that would be cool, a video game or even like a comic or something.
Hmm.
That'd probably be the more viable because, yeah, I don't know. I don't know the numbers of the show because I don't know anything about the creators. I don't know any of the actors. Everyone did a fucking smashing job, though.
Yeah, the actors have been in stuff. It's like, Sunita Mani was in Mr. Robot. Wonmi Mosaku was recently in Loki. So, yeah, they're doing stuff.
Okay, yeah. So they're pretty prolific then, I guess. Yeah. Hmm. To an extent, but I don't watch those shows, so I haven't watched much American television for a little while.
Yeah, I think rather than a season two of this show, maybe just more of this kind of show is what I would like to see. Yeah? More introspective, you know, meandering kind of stuff. Which I guess is not really that marketable, to be fair.
It's hard, yeah. That's like, this kind of stuff usually comes more from the Asian market.
And even in the realm of anime, like these kinds of animes generally only get one season. So
yeah. But like, yeah, I like, because I'm obviously more attuned to watching like anime and stuff like that and stuff from Asia. But like, I think when an American production gets something right, it gets it like really right, you know? And for a show like this, where I think, honestly, I think most of the people, like executives and stuff, have let the creators like kind of do what they want, you know, because it feels quite like organic. I feel like there's a lot of personality in the show, which is a big thing for me when I kind of judge films these days. It's like sometimes I'll see a film that or a TV series that looks good and all the elements are there that make a good story, but I might not like the personality of the show. It might be too clean or might be too corporate. But for a show like this where it's not like, yeah, there's plot armor and shit, so it's not perfect per se, but for me this is like a perfect show where the art and the entertainment value have like merged together. And I think there's that for me is like the best kind of entertainment where the art house meets the entertainment factor.
Yeah.
Because like, I do like a lot of art house films, but I will admit I'm probably not going to watch a lot of them like ever again because they're not entertaining per se. But for a show like this to scratch like both, where like I am having fun vibing with like the meandering parts of the show, and then but it's also like quite violent, like the horror aspects, and like, you know, there's, I mean, I could spot references to like Perfect Blue, to Akira, to Breath of the Wild, to just all the to Alien. There's definitely it's obviously like Alien as well.
Yeah,
you know, there's just so much stuff in this show that is hidden very well, but you can see that it's created its own thing, and I can't really recommend this show enough. Like, even if it's not going to get a season two, like I hope that this show does find an audience,
because
I think it was like the one of the highest rated shows of last year on Letterboxd. I think I was watching like a Letterboxd 2023 in review or something.
It's pretty highly rated. But yeah, obviously doesn't quite have the reach of its contemporaries, which is a shame, but you know, like I think there is definitely a market for this kind of show. I think it tells a closed story, so yeah, it doesn't particularly need a season two. But if you're a fan of anime especially, I think especially like the non-shonen type of animes where it is perhaps a bit slower, I think you'd really dig this show. It's just a really nice watch.
Because Dan and I, we recommend a lot of like anime and stuff and introspective like Asian shit. I don't know why you'd be listening to us, but if you're not into anime and introspective Asian shit, then you can watch this show and you can kind of get the taste of it, but it's American. So yeah, like I think that's like the good balance to kind of watch maybe a gateway into some more introspective shows.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to watch. Yeah. It's easy to watch, except that it's on binge in Australia, so it's not easy to watch.
You can watch it on binge.
If you can get your hands on it.
Get the free trial, watch it like multiple times in a week, and then hope that they release like a physical media copy of it.
Yeah.
Show it some love. So I can at least not get a season two, but at least gets released on physical media, and then I can buy it and watch all the special features and stuff.
But I think that's all we have on Scavenger's Reign.
Yeah.
But yeah, guys, what did you think of this show? If you've seen it, did you enjoy it? Would you like to see a season two for it? Let us know. You can get in touch with us at twoasianblokes@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at twoasianblokes. Or you can join our Facebook group to be part of the conversation.
We might, I don't know, I'm not sure how many times I'm going to pivot when I watch a show that's not Asian, but we just really like it. But this is the one, it's our show. We
just it's what it is. And you're in for the ride. But no, thank you for listening as always, guys. Take care of yourselves. Yeah. Until next time, we'll see you later.
Yep. See ya.